All right, so we're in James chapter 5, and our message is five more minutes. Five more minutes. Have you thought about how often we say that? How often five more minutes is the solution? How many times you've had to tell someone I'm running late, like just 5 minutes and I'll be there. I'm just in a little bit of traffic. Five more minutes in the oven is what we need because it's not quite ready. You check, you're like, you need 5 minutes. I'm coming back. And then you come back and it's burnt. It actually only needed 2 more minutes. 5 minutes is every husband knows how much longer it's going to be until his wife's done with her makeup. How long until you're ready? 5 more minutes. Every wife knows it's how much longer there's going to be in the game before the husband can turn off the TV. It's just 5 minutes left in the game. Every kid knows when parents say it's time to brush your teeth and go to bed when they're watching a movie or something. It's like, no, Mom, come on, just 5 more minutes, right? You don't ask for an hour, which is what you intend to get. You just ask for 5 more minutes. Well, James talks about patience in the 5th chapter. The 7th verse... And that's going to be our subject today. I want to talk to you about how to honor God, how to worship God through cultivating patience. We're going to be starting in verse 7, and we're going to read to verse 11. Therefore, be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. See how the farmer waits for the precious fruit of the earth, waiting patiently for it until it receives the early and latter rain. You also be patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. Do not grumble against one another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed to endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job, and seeing the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. How great is that? Now, patience is one of those things that every one of us want to have. No one would take pride in being an impatient person. It's like, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. Well, I'm 6 foot, like football, super impatient, right? Like, it's not a virtue. We wouldn't want that. We all want to be patient. None of us want to need patience. We want to have it, but we don't ever want to need it. Now, the good news is that patience can be developed. The amount of patience, the level of patience you have today, is not what you're stuck with. Patient people are made. They're not born. They're built. They're not born. You can become a patient person. So don't let yourself off the hook. That's just not my personality type. It's like, no, look, you can develop your patience. It's something that you can grow in. It's a muscle that can be built. That's the good news. The bad news is that the only way to develop your patience is to run out of the amount of patience that you have. To be put into a situation where you realize, dang it, I don't have it. That's the only way to get more of it. So, what is patience? Patience is a serenity in the face of adversity, in the face of difficulty. It's a serenity, a calmness inside in the face of difficult things that you're going through, circumstances that feel out of control. The Bible talks about patience as the exact word itself, as enduring a trial without panicking. The ability to endure a trial without freaking out. The opposite of patience then would be irritability. It would be to be full of self-pity. It would be to be upset. It would be to be stressed out. When he says be patient, what he's saying is be calm when you don't feel like you can. Be calm when you feel like freaking out. That's what God wants for us. He wants for us to basically come to a place where there's a relaxed confidence, a serenity. Now, don't think of that as being a passive thing, because we know it's not passive. Because when he praises the perseverance of Job, and that comes up later, we'll explain that in just a minute. When he says, you've heard of the perseverance of Job, that word is a word we're familiar with in our Call of the Wild study. It's the word hyperstand, remember? You've heard of hyperstance of Job. You've heard of the fact that Job had perseverance, that Job let God build this perseverance up in it. And this is something that very early on in James he introduced, that when trials come our way, they haven't come to destroy us, they've come to develop us. So it's not just passive, oh well, it is what it is. No, there's a strength that gives you the ability to have that relaxed confidence in the face of difficult circumstances. You and I are in control of one thing, your response to how crazy life can become. And to the extent that you trust God, you'll be able to flex this muscle called patience. And then life can become a gift. Life, even crazy life, even brutal life, even full of difficult twists and turns, can become a gift. That's what he says in another translation of the same verse. This is verse 11 from the Message. What a gift life is to those who stay the course. Those who know, don't give up too soon. Let the clock run down all the way. Just 5 minutes, run it. Run it down all the way. That's because God cares right down to the last detail. In that sense, we can then lean into the sovereignty of God, that he's good, that he has a plan, that he's up to something. So we can have that relaxed confidence. We can have that serenity in the face of adversity. We can be patient. And the goal of the Christian life, remember this, the goal of the Christian life is to become like God. More like God than you are today. Now, that's of course why it becomes so easy to be impatient. Because the way we become more like God is God allows difficult things and uses those things and works those things for the good that we might be more and more conformed to the image of Christ. You can't be conformed to the image of anything without pressure. To stamp something, that takes pressure. So God is seeking to conform us to the image of His Son, Jesus. And how does that happen? Pressure. How do we know we're becoming more like Jesus? We become more patient because God is patient. God is patient. In fact, He said that to Moses directly, Exodus 34:6. Moses said, "Show me your glory." God took him behind a rock, and God passed by. And as that happened, God declared who He was over Moses. And He said, the Lord, compassionate, gracious God who is slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. God is slow to anger. Some people have this image of God that He's just waiting for us to step out of line so He can squish us like the bug that we are. No. God sent His Son to die for you on the cross. God loves you. He wants everybody to have eternal life. God holds back His anger. God is slow to anger. God is patient. So we become more like God, and we become more patient as that happens. And it takes pressure for that to happen. So listen, be patient with yourself. That can be one of the most, we'll talk about different areas of patience. But I think one of the most challenging is being patient with us. Why? Because it's so slow to grow. So we have to be mindful of the gaps. You have to be mindful of the gap between where you are today and where you're ultimately going to become. In that waiting, there's the temptation to become impatient with ourselves. And we need to have confidence that if we just keep doing the right things, we're going to see growth. It can be almost undetectable to ourselves in real time, but if we just stay with it, what'll happen? We'll see growth eventually if we don't give up. James gives us different ways to think about patience for different sorts of analogies or a lens to view patience through. And in these verses that we read, the first thing he tells us is to be patient like a farmer. We just read that. Be patient like a farmer. A farmer knows that there are seasons. That's the biggest takeaway I have from a farmer. A farmer understands that the year has rhythms to it. And he mentions the farmer waiting for the precious harvest. This harvest that's the fruit of the earth coming out. And he has to wait patiently for both the early and the latter rain. A farmer understands that there are rhythms to the year. And there's a time to sow, and there's a time to reap. And there's a separation between. And here's when rain's coming. The early rain in Israel came somewhere around October. The latter rain came sometime around March or April. So he knew he needed to lean into things and have things ready for when that rain showed up. He needed to plan it way back here so that at this point, when the early rain came, so that it was just at that point When the latter rain came, when the latter rain showed up, and so it's in your life, and so it's in my life. Waiting is not wasting. And we can be using those waiting periods and those waiting moments to be developing what's going to be useful down the road. That's what I would encourage you to do. When you have in your mind something that you want to see happening, you have something you're impatient with, like, this is taking longer. I don't like how this is happening. I'm impatient with this circumstance, this person, or this situation. Always ask yourself, what can I be doing now so I'll be grateful when that time does come? I think sometimes we can have it in our heads that something's coming, and all we do during the whole time we're waiting for it is just wait for it. Instead of actually asking, what could I be doing now so I'm grateful when that day shows up, finally? Think about a farmer. A farmer, if he spent all his time only stressing and obsessing about the lettuce, but didn't actually secure transportation for when that lettuce showed up, didn't actually pay for refrigerated storage, negotiate a contract with a grocer to sell it to, and all the vendors, and all the things along the way. He's not just waiting and stressing, he's actually arranging and doing all the things that he knows need to be done, so when that this does come out, he's ready for it. So it's maximized. He'd say, look, I can't do anything about this over here to grow faster, but what can I do? Say, hey, this is growing. I can't do anything, you know, about when that shows up. Some of us, this is out of my hands here. But what I can do is develop. What I can do is be proactive. What I can do is the things that are in my control here, in my control now, I can be patient. But I can be patient proactively. So I wonder right now, what can you be doing while you wait for the thing that you're impatiently hoping would show? What can you be doing today? What will I need to do behind the scenes? What can you do now? How can you be proactive like a farmer so that you're using those waiting days, that waiting time, to develop the things inside of you for when that season, when that time finally does come? James says, wait like a farmer. He says, then wait like you know the future. Wait like you know the future. And the future he's speaking about is how this thing ends. And that's with us standing before God. That's how this party ends. This whole world, this whole life, it ultimately comes to a place where we stand before God. He puts it this way, that the judge is at the door, like, you know, hands on the knob. And of course, that has a dual meaning, because we know that Jesus, again and again and again, spoke about his second coming, that he's coming back to this world. He's coming back to set up his kingdom. He's coming back, and that could happen at any moment. We have no idea when it could happen. And we should always live with the expectation that just like his first coming, you know, caught people off guard, so his second coming will. But it doesn't have to just be the end of the world that causes you to stand before God. It could be the end of your life. And so we should be patient, like we know that, as though we remember that, as though we truly believe that, that at any moment this could all end. We're going to be standing before God to do what? To give an account of the deeds done in the body. That's what it says in Hebrews 9:27. It's appointed for man once to die and then to give an account for the deeds done while he was in skin. So if we're patient, it'll be because we realize that we're going to give an account to God. Now, that's as Jesus people. Not you're going to give an account and depending on that judgment, whether you're going to heaven or hell. No, that was started at the cross. This judgment is a reward ceremony. This is silver, bronze, or gold. This is what Jesus said, I'm coming and my reward is with me. So we should have that image of Jesus in our minds, that he is truly coming, wanting to reward us. But what we're doing now is either going to give him the occasion to reward us, or it's preventing him from being able to lavishly reward us like he wants us to. So we should be patient, like we know the future. And if we're doing that, what are we going to be doing? We're going to be using all the gifts we have, using our abilities that we have. And it's going to be to bring people to know Jesus, to bring beauty into this world, to help people come to know Christ. And I think one of the biggest things that keeps us from living patiently is we get jealous of other people. Jealousy's been brought up in this book of James. And the jealousy that pops up is interesting because it essentially derives impatience from seeing what God is doing in someone else's life that we wish he was doing in ours. That's what happens. I would be patient, but I saw that you're over here. And that's where I want to be. I want to be at that level. I want to have that position. I want to have that possession. And then the family starts breaking down that we're meant to be living in as Jesus people. Because what? Now we're lashing out at each other. We're cutting each other down. We're jealous. It's causing there to be all that friction and all that unpleasantness. And so what will cure that is remembering, man, I'm not going to be held accountable for what you have. I'm only going to be accountable for what I have. The enemy will always try and get you to focus on what you don't have and what you don't get to do instead of focusing on what do you have in front of you. What can you do with what you've been given? I think about Joseph. How easy it would have been for him to be impatient. Because he had a dream of being a great leader one day. He had a dream of being a powerful ruler. And that even his own family would recognize, ultimately, his leadership ability. But God allowed the situations of life that came his way to bring pressure. Because how does God get the stamp of his glory on us? It's oftentimes through difficult circumstances. The thing you're longing for in your life to see happen is the very same reason God has allowed some of the difficult things that have come your way. Your prayer has been heard, and God oftentimes answers our prayers with a trial, an unlikely gift that's there to do the very same thing that we want him to do on the inside of us. If we don't quit, if we stay the course, life then becomes a gift. So Joseph, what did he do? Joseph used the gifts that he had, like a farmer, in small ways that would serve him down the road. I'm a leader. I'm meant to lead one day. But I'm in prison. What can I do? He didn't focus on what he couldn't do. He focused on what he could do. Can't lead a nation right now. What can I do? Sweep some floors. Take care of this jail cell. Start to serve other prisoners. I've got a great gift of interpreting dreams. One day I might even interpret a king's dream. Save a nation. What are you going to do now? I don't know. Help my little prison friend with that dream he had. No one saw nothing glamorous about it. Stakes weren't high. He was just voluntarily helping someone out. He was developing his gift like a farmer in the background. And then all of those things, all the muscle memory he was developing in those days would come back to help him later. And finally, we're almost done, James tells us to wait like your forefathers. Wait and be patient like your forefathers. The beautiful thing is that he throws his arm back to all the Old Testament history, all of the people who have come and gone following God. And he basically just showcases the result of patience. All these amazing things that they did and were able to be a part of, it involved patience. Look at it in another translation from the Message. It's verse 10. He says, take the old prophets as your mentors. They put up with anything, went through everything, and never once quit. All the time honoring God. You think about your favorite Bible story, right? And ask yourself this question. Does any of their story not involve suffering? No one remembers the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego just because they were good leaders. It's because they got put in a furnace. Moses was put into a crocodile-infested river. David had a lunatic father-in-law who tried to kill him for a decade. Esther's mom and dad both died when she was a little girl. And then a maniac tried to kill every single person on the earth that she was related to. And she had such a strange dynamic going in her relationship. If she walked into her husband's room without him calling her first, she would be killed on the spot. I love that Queen Esther's story. It's like a beauty pageant in the Bible, sort of, right? Where the stakes were very high. What am I trying to get you to see here? What is James saying? all the stories you love, they were people who were patient and didn't freak out, but kept and cultivated that serenity in the face of adversity. They, in their moment of truth, took their hyper stance. They took their stance and chose to have a good foundation so that they could have that relaxed confidence that comes from that base. I'm like springs here on my feet. And now it doesn't matter what happens. I'm stable. When you have that foundation, the opposite of what the devil wants to do in your trials comes to pass. You have to understand both God and Satan have a plan for your suffering. Both God and Satan have an outcome in mind when trials come your way. The devil wants you to throw in the towel and be like, you know, peace out. Like, forget this. Like, I thought God was good. He wants you to bail on Christianity. He wants you to bail on following God. Because that's what he wants to happen. He wants the sun to come out and to scorch the wheat that, you know, springs up quickly. I love God, but it doesn't have roots. Because when you have a root system, you have that relaxed confidence. The redwood trees, their root system goes out for miles and they connect all around each other so they can withstand crazy winds that come their way. Their roots are all connected. They're strong. They have roots. Now they have a relaxed confidence. I'm not going to be taken out by this storm because of my root system. The enemy wants to take you out with trials, but God wants to develop you through your trials. He wants you in your trials to know, I'm being developed so I can have a root system. God is making me more like Christ, giving me the opportunity to become like Him. And he points to the ultimate example of this when he says, remember our homie Job. Remember Job, what he went through. Remember Job's hyper stance. Now, what happened to Job? If you haven't read the Old Testament book of Job in a while, a refresher. He lost his house. He lost his health, he lost his wealth, he lost his 7 sons and 3 daughters all on the same day. It got so bad that his wife was like, I don't know what you did, man, but you should just curse God and die. Job was like, thanks, honey, right? Early on as you're reading Job, you're like, why did the devil not take his wife out? And you listen to her talk and you're like, she's on his team. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I understand why he left her, right? And yet Job, what did he do? One of the most beautiful things. And what he actually said to his wife was, honey, Shall we receive good only from God and not difficult? Shall we receive good from Him only and not evil? He gives and He takes away. And at ground zero, when his entire life looking like a dumpster fire, he said, blessed be the name of the Lord. Though you slay me, I will follow you. James tells us, think about Job's patience. Job had no idea why he was suffering. We get to read the book of Job. We're like, oh, this is happening because. When he was going through it in real time, though, he didn't know that God had been bragging about him to the devil. And that's why this took place. He had no clue why it was happening. But he knew who was in charge. One of the most beautiful verses in the book of Job, which is an honest book, full of confusion, full of pain. He didn't know why. He didn't know. He was bewildered. He was in shock. He was raw. He was asking difficult questions. And he was giving it all to God. He was giving God that hurt, giving God that pain. But one of the most amazing confessions of faith is where he says in verse 25 of chapter 19, I know that my Redeemer lives, and he shall stand at last on the earth. And after my skin is destroyed, I know this, in my flesh I shall see God. What was he saying? He's like, I can go through this because I know the judge's hand is at the door. He's not far. He's up to something. And whatever happens here, I'm going to stand before him ultimately. God is going to have the last word in this situation. So Job says, I don't know why I'm going through this, but I know who's in charge. Therefore, when this is all done, the beautiful end intended by the Lord, who is compassionate and who is full of goodness and is slow to anger, the end intended by God, what is it? Verse 10, chapter 23 of Job, he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. Job didn't know why, but he was patient because he knew who. Therefore, he could believe what was taking place. It's helped me become like gold. And when this is all done, I'm going to come forth this gold. This product of my life is, in fact, being made through the process of my life. That is what I'm going through. So I'm going to come forth like gold because God is going to win in the end. I have no freaking clue, but I'm going to trust him even if it kills me because he's trying to make gold out of me. And how does he make gold out of me? Fire. Fire is how you bring forth pure gold. God's wanting to bring you forth as gold, so don't give up. Stay the course, and you'll watch life become a beautiful gift. To summarize it, I want to point you to one of my favorite quotes from Ralph Waldo Emerson. A hero is no braver than an ordinary man, but he is brave 5 minutes longer.